Jake, Jake, over here, please.
Yes, sir.
Unreal performance. You just helped Jake's Manchu knock tobacco out of the park.
Well, I wanted to do good, and I tried to do good. I think I did pretty good.
Is it true that Jake's Manchu is non-tobacco, no nicotine, comes in 10 delicious flavors, is USDA certified organic, and can help guys quit dipping tobacco?
Yeah, it's true. I just wanted to go out there and give 110%. It's a group effort.
So, tell me about your home run 10% off promotion.
Yep, for me it's like a hanging curveball. Just go to Jake's Manchu and type in two words, home run, and get 10% off of your purchase. Even I can do that.
Well, I don't know about that. Alright, enter home run as the promo code at jakesmanchu.com upon checkout. Got it, quite the performance.
Chew healthy, chew mint, sir.
Outstanding. Everyone loves a home run.
Chrysler Town & Country is the most awarded minivan ever.
Right now, get 0% APR financing or $2,500 cash allowance, plus $500 bonus cash when financed, plus current owners of
Need the speed to power all of your devices? Xfinity delivers the fastest and most reliable in-home Wi-Fi, so everyone can do more of what they love to do online. Get the fastest in-home Wi-Fi today, or get started with Economy Plus Internet from Comcast for as low as $19.99 a month for a whole year. See for yourself. Call 1-800-XFINITY or visit Comcast.com today. Requires enrollment to EcoBill paperless billing. Offer ends 3/31/15. Restrictions apply. Limited to new customers. Equipment, taxes, and fees extra. After promo, regular rates apply.
O'Reilly. Stop by any of the 102 Chicagoland O'Reilly Auto Parts stores where you'll find everyday low prices on the parts you need to keep your vehicle at its best. Our guaranteed low prices ensure you're always getting our best deal. In fact, we'll match any auto parts store's price on any like item. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
USA HD2 Chicago.
The score!
Scoreboard update.
From the Chicago Wolves Update Studio, the Wolves host Utica in the playoffs this Wednesday and Friday night at Allstate Arena. Terribly sad news for the Score family and the city of Chicago as Doug Buffone passed away today at the age of 71. Dan and Barry have been talking about it this afternoon, taking your phone calls and memories on Doug as well. We'll get you quickly through what's happening in Chicago sports today. The Bulls host the Bucks in Game 2 tonight at 7 at the United Center. Bulls have a 1-0 lead on Milwaukee in that series. The Blackhawks and Nashville play Game 4 tomorrow at the UC. Scott Darling starts in net. Hawks up 2-1 there. The White Sox host Cleveland tonight. Pregame on the Score starts at 6:35. John Danks opposes Trevor Bauer. White Sox made some roster moves today, including calling up Carlos Rodon from AAA, who will pitch out of the bullpen. And the Cubs are in Pittsburgh this evening with Jake Arrieta facing A.J. Burnett. This scoreboard update is brought to you by the convenience stores of Speedway. Draft coverage on the Score is being brought to you by the Hub Arkish team at chicagofootball.com, your source for everything football. I'm Matt Batacola, and you're listening to the radio home for White Sox baseball. The next game on the Score is tonight at 6:35 when the Sox take on the Indians on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This hour is brought to you by St. Charles Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram.
Boars and Bernstein. Afternoons on the Score.
The Bears are who we thought they were. No damn good. They stunk. I mean, I'm just saying that. But let me tell you something. It's very difficult, if you really think about this, very difficult to score when your offense is on the bench. When your defense is out there giving up 70, 80, 70, 64-yard drives and taking up the time, you don't have the damn ball to do anything with it. And that's Lovie Smith's fault, too. He's calling those damn defenses. I'm not calling them. Ed's not calling them. He's calling them. And it's about time you start calling what the hell's going on out there. And this is not the first game. This happened in Detroit. This happened in Cincinnati. You tell me what's going on out there when that team can take a football and drive it down your damn throat. At least hold them to a field goal. This defense sucks. And Tommy Harris, as far as I'm concerned, he should have walked off that field, got in a taxi cab, went to the airport, and kept on going somewhere. I don't give a damn where he is as long as he's gone from here. Because this is enough of that crap. What the hell is going on? Tommy Harris takes a guy that's laying on the ground and decides to pummel him. Big man. But he hasn't done anything anyway all year. So what the hell's the difference? This defense sucks. This is moronic. We're going to get our ass whipped all the way down the line. I've had it. I have had it. I want somebody to get kicked in the ass. and get out there and play. You're getting paid to play this game and play it right. I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me. And that's what I want to see. Not today. Not like this, what happened today. This defense sucks. You are a professional team. Act like one, for God's sakes.
Boers and Bernstein.
Hub Arcus.
Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score.
The late Doug Buffon, I'm extremely sad to say. But there are many who are also lamenting the fact that his last season of Bears football was this one. Oy. And joining us now on the Grossinger Lincolnwood hotline, find over 4,000 vehicles at grossingerdeals.com, is Score football expert Hub Arkish at Chicago, at Shy Football, chicagofootball.com, at Hub Arkish on Twitter. Hey, Hub.
How you doing, guys?
Nah, been better. We've had easier shows to do.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, listening to that last bite just before we came in, it's funny. Obviously, Doug and Ed did the post-game show forever, and for I'm not sure how long now. I guess it's been about 10 years I've been doing the pregame, and we would do these out on these remotes, you know, and we'd be out in a restaurant or a bar or a casino somewhere. And listening to Doug just now, I know a lot of fans would think, well, he just would get upset sometimes during the show when you'd be thinking about it and talking about it. There were days, and he wasn't on until postgame. He wasn't going on until 3:15. He'd show up usually an hour into the pregame, about 10 in the morning, and he was ready to go just like that sometimes. We'd start talking about it before he ever had a call, before he'd ever really gotten into it. This isn't some of the down years. And by the way, in the good years, he'd be really excited about it. But, I've heard a lot of what's been said today, and it's all true. And I think the one thing, I think we've all talked about it, but maybe not just used the word, he brought a passion to this thing like nobody I've ever been around. We've been friends since the end of his career, and I think his career is something great that obviously we want to talk about. But as far as his broadcast career, he brought a passion to this thing like nobody I've ever worked with.
When you think about him, Hub, and we've talked about Buffon, the guy, a lot today. You know, Dan and I, we didn't get to see him play much. I saw him right near the end of his career. When you think about Doug the player, tell us about Doug the player and how good he was, because he really underrated in terms of the era in which he played, and especially nationally. People just don't realize what a good football player he was.
Yeah, he was a great football player. And listen, it's hard to be a linebacker for the Chicago Bears if you're not a Hall of Famer, you know, and yet he was that next level. And, you know, I think I'm disappointed that there weren't a few Pro Bowls, a few more Pro Bowls in the second part of his career after Dick retired. One of the things I don't think a lot of people realize is that he actually didn't become a full-time starter until his fifth year in the league. He was a fourth-round pick in 66, and he logged a lot of playing time those first four seasons, but he became a full-time starter in 70. And really, from about 73, 74, and I think he became the captain, I want to say it was 72, it was 71 or 72. And from that point on, he was the dominant player on the Bears defense. And even in those bad years, and there were a lot of bad years, the Bears would still be known for their defense. You know, they could be fierce, and Doug was the leader of that whole thing for 8-9 years. And when you needed a play, he was the playmaker. I mean, he retired. I think he still is the Bears' all-time leader in interceptions by a linebacker. Four picks. I want to say he had 9 recovered fumbles. I know he scored 1 touchdown. Interestingly enough, and this surprised me, I don't know all this from memory. I was looking up a little while ago. Apparently, he was never credited with forcing a fumble, which is interesting because he'd lay the wood on you. I mean, this guy could hit you. He was, by those standards, by the 70s, the late 60s, he was a big linebacker. I mean, now he'd almost be undersized. And, of course, I'm not talking about the Doug in the 50s or 60s. But in those days, he was considered a big outside linebacker. And he would come and hit you. He played 60 minutes, and he was an outstanding football player.
I wondered about that because, you know, those Bears teams you talk about that were so bad for so many years, they were just a vicious defensive football team, though you constantly saw people documenting the records of the teams that played them the week after. I mean, they just beat the living hell out of teams. And you're saying Doug was a big part of that.
Well, it's exactly what Doug was saying towards the end of that last soundbite we heard. He may have gotten his ass beat, but he took somebody with him. And, it was a street fight out there when he was playing in those days. I'm not saying the game was different. I'm not talking about the good old days. But the way the Bears' defenses approached it, the mentality, it had almost become a mentality. You got to realize, they won a championship in 63, didn't go to the playoffs again until 77. And so for the prime of Doug's career, it was almost not even a thought about, being a playoff team or going to a championship game or second half of his career to a Super Bowl. It was about winning the battle, winning the battle on Sunday. And the defense often won the battle on Sunday. And until Walter got there in 75, the offense wasn't worth talking about.
I remember Doug telling me something about how many sacks he had before it was an official statistic. And I believe he said something, or he had... In a 14-game season, it was at least 20 that he insisted he had before it was trackable, before it was really fashionable. It just wasn't something that people paid a lot of attention to. It's something incidental that would occasionally happen, but you didn't have defenses built around the strategy of doing that. But do you know anything about that? Because you were looking at some of the stats. I don't know if anybody could have looked at tape and gone back and sort of retroactively seen some of those accomplishments.
Yeah, there are some unofficial sources that credit Doug with 18 sacks.
Okay.
And actually, it was in 1968, which strikes me as a little strange because he was playing a lot, but he wasn't even starting yet. But he was an outstanding blitzing linebacker. And again, it was before the genres existed for the most part. And he could drop into coverage, but he was actually better off blitzing and rushing the passer because he was never an exceptional athlete. And, he kidded about it, and I'm here to tell you it was true. He wasn't an exceptional athlete. He was just a great football player. And so, most of the time, because he was on the field for 60 minutes, in a lot of, I would say, I couldn't put a percentage on it, but a good chunk of the times the other team passed, he was rushing the passer. And I've seen this unofficial stat of 18 sacks in 68, which, by the way, I believe would be a Bears record. I think, isn't 17 and a half Richard Dent's best year, or 17? And so he was an outstanding pass rusher. And I was at 82 when they started keeping sack records. I think he was already retired before they started keeping it as an official stat.
Hub, what does it say to you about Doug that he was able to maintain a relationship with the Bears despite the fact that over the last however many years he was a guy who was paid to have an opinion and to give his opinion honestly about the team, and yet he still seemed he still seemed to have a great relationship with that organization. Unless I'm wrong about that, it seemed that way. What does it say to you about him that he was able to do that?
I think it was respect for his love of the organization. I'm sure it's been mentioned. If it hasn't, I will remind everybody he was actually the last active Bear player to have played for George Ellis. When he retired, he was the last one who played for Papa Bear. And when you listen to some of these fun bumps that we're playing, you don't say, oh, wow, he can't stand the team. You can feel that he's upset, and the passion comes from his love of the team. And he loved that team. Dan was talking about, I heard you guys earlier. Here's a guy from Pennsylvania and Louisville who stayed in Chicago. And, and part of that was because of some of the business ventures, the restaurants. But, he loved going back home to hunt with his brothers and his dad. And he didn't have to be here, but he loved Chicago, and he loved the Chicago Bears. And when he got mad, it wasn't because he was trying to criticize anybody individually. I don't think you ever heard him go after the family. I never heard him go after the McCaskey family. And you rarely heard him go after, the front office folks of the administration. He would go after the coaches because he's a player who knew that in his playing career, the coaches would come after him. That was part of the game. It wasn't personal. And I think you always knew with Doug Buffone, and there was as much time on the air when he was talking about his love of him and how excited he was for him and how happy he was with him as there was when he would get upset. You always knew it wasn't personal and it wasn't unfair. He only went off like that when they deserved it. And I think the people at Halas Hall understood that and respected it.
Well, I think also, too, that he was fond of saying, I'm looking for something to hang my hat on when analyzing a game beforehand, meaning he always wanted to find a reason why he thought the Bears could succeed.
that even when the Bears were bad, he would go into a game and you'd hear him. And I, having done pregame with him, that he would always approach it that way, where he'd say, I'm trying to find something to hang my hat on. Like, this could work for them. This could be something that ends up with this being a good day. There was never rooting against them. It was always, while being completely honest, always telling you exactly where his heart was, and that was trying to find a way that he could envision it working out well.
Oh, and he worked hard at it, Dan. I know you were talking about this earlier as well. And a big part of my relationship with Doug, other than Terry, maybe the only one really close to his generation, although now a few years younger, he was a huge Pro Football Weekly fan. He loved Pro Football Weekly. He would call me on a Wednesday morning and say, "How about I get the paper yesterday?" And I'd say, "Well, Doug, most of the country doesn't get it on Tuesday, but I'll see what I can do." You know, and we did that. I don't know how many times we did that, but I always made sure he had his paper by Wednesday.